Joe Presents TKO.
Right, welcome to a very festive edition of TKO and Joe.
Start that again because I was swearing under my breath there.
That's fine, don't worry. These are really good. Do you want to try them?
Yeah.
People listening, these are mince pies.
This is the first
time. Which you've somehow at 32 never tried.
Never tried a mince pie because...
What do you mean?
Well, up until 10 minutes ago, I thought it was minced beef.
And I didn't, you can hear everyone laughing.
And I didn't fancy a sweet beef treat.
But what I don't understand is, it's all very well you saying that's what you thought it was. How in 3 decades has no one ever told you what?
Well, I never really discussed it. No, I don't fancy one.
Well, go on then.
This is good audio, isn't it? For anyone listening.
Carl's eating a mince pie for the first time.
Turns out it's not beef.
Thoughts?
Well, it's all right. All right.
We've been away for a while.
It's a revelation, because, oh, they're nice, they're sweet.
Describe it to me. If I've never eaten a mince pie.
They're a bit, oh, they're sweet. Cinnamon.
Yeah.
Is there like clove in there?
I don't fucking know.
I like it. I don't mind a mince pie.
Wow. Your life is about to change.
Genuinely thought beef was involved somewhere.
That's mad. Just like raisins and sultanas. And
very nice.
Good. All right, well, cheers. Welcome back. Thanks. Haven't seen you for ages, mate. Spent a whole year together. And then you went off into camp. The last one I saw you was Manchester.
Yeah.
Getting prepped for Vegas. And you didn't mention that your hand had gone.
No.
Again. So when did it happen?
So it happened, right. I've seen a specialist back at home, Michael Eames. He's been helping me out. I've seen another specialist as well, who I have to mention, Dr. Mike Hayton. Both of them have helped me out quite a lot. They knew the time frame. So I'm back in the camp. In Manchester, not sparring, hitting paddles, not hitting anything too solid. And then I was given the go-ahead to start sparring by Dr. Eames. The fracture wasn't fully healed. He knew that. I knew it. But he knew the time frame, the fight that I needed to start sparring. We delayed it as long as possible. My first spar back with Kez Ashfaq, probably 6 weeks out from a fight. In the third round, I refractured my hand. So I had to stop sparring. I then didn't spar again on the advice of the specialist. I didn't spar until I got to Vegas. So 3 weeks out from the fight. So I'd done like 2 weeks of sparring in Vegas with Stephen Fulton and Akib Fiaz.
Yeah.
I'd done like probably 26 rounds with him in total out there. The hand held up well.
Could you feel it though?
No. Felt okay.
Okay.
And then my last spar, the 10-round spar, I got through 9 rounds and it went in the 9th round.
God.
Refractured it again. So 12 days out from the fight, my hand is refractured again. Not great.
Give you 7 more days than the last time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We we inquired with Nevada about... It was strange. So Mike Hayton, who has an involvement with the British Border Control as well, has been able to turn this... Not over... There was a rule anyway, but he's changed the rule, whereas... Boxers involved in fights in Britain can fight with local anaesthetic in their hand pre-fight, as long as you don't go over 10 mils or whatever. So it's just a local anaesthetic in the hand, kills the pain, not giving you any sort of benefit, just evening the playing fields.
Is that cortisol?
It's not cortisol, it's something else. I don't know what it is, but it's not. You're not allowed that, I don't think, cortisol.
Right.
Anyway, you're allowed the local anaesthetic in the UK. He contacted Nevada asking their ruling on it without saying my name. They said, you're allowed it as long as it doesn't go over 10 mils, a local anaesthetic. And then when we inquired about me getting a local anaesthetic and use my name, obviously, they said no for whatever reason. They wouldn't allow it. So I had to go into the fight. What they did allow was painkilling cream, which is like useless.
Well, it's for like your top layer of skin.
Yeah. So I had that on, which didn't do any favours to me, really. And that's how I started the fight.
Wow. So all this caused you a little bit of undue stress, really, less than a week before a fight.
Absolutely. I just remember being, I was really nervous, extremely nervous going into the fight. There was a lot on the line. My career was on the line. I'm going into it nowhere near 100% fit, obviously, with the issue with my hand. I was also having an issue with my ankle that was causing me grief in the lead up to it. So preparation wasn't ideal, but I had the fight. People paid for me to come and watch me in Philadelphia and the fight never happened. There was people paying and had paid and they were in Vegas to watch me fight. There was no way I couldn't fight. And I told both specialist who was dealing with me. I'm just going to have to go through this and do it. And they were saying, okay, let's do it then. And I done it. I won the fight. But it wasn't an ideal scenario going into it. And mentally, like, I had to be very, very strong.
So your opponent's Tyler McCreary, unbeaten American. That sort of classic American style, sort of Philly shell.
Yeah.
Bit of a mover. I got up to watch it and I didn't feel particularly stressed because you just look so comfortable. And I didn't, just for people at home, you didn't even mention your hand to me. I guess because of what happened last time in Philly, like, it's almost better just to tell no one about anything.
I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell... So my team knew about it and the specialist. I didn't tell my wife because I didn't want her to worry.
Yeah.
Which she was pretty annoyed about.
Yeah.
I didn't tell my dad. I just didn't tell. I didn't tell anyone. So there was only a couple of people knew about the hand. But that's all I needed to know. What I knew was I was going to fight. So what was the point in me having people worry about the situation I was in going into the fight?
Yeah. So that's interesting. But a different sort of nerves, though, to fighting Leo Santa Cruz, who's like elite world level opposition. This is a kid that's on the way up. He's unbeaten, but he's not of that proven level yet. So what for you was causing the nerves the most, do you think?
My hand.
Yeah.
And the issue that I had with my hand getting into the fight, I knew it was going to get hurt in the fight at some point. I was hitting the pads pre-fight. The hand felt fine, but I hit him in the first round. I can't remember. I think it was a left hook, top of head, hurt my hand. Didn't feel like it had broke then, or refractured, but in the second round it went properly, and it was sore, but the hand was the thing that was giving me the most issues. I knew it was fit, I knew it was sharp, and apart from the injuries I had in training, like what I was doing in sparring, them kind of 20-odd rounds I had of sparring were very good in Vegas, but the hand was giving me a lot of concerns.
Might be a stupid question. When you hurt your hand in a fight, you know you've broken it, does it hurt regardless of what shot you throw, or can you throw it in certain ways to minimise the pain?
Certain shots, I could land jabs, not that solid. I felt like I could hit him to the body because it's softer. Couldn't throw left hooks to the head. Could not hit him with a left hook. And even at the end of exchanges, I feel like that's a shot that probably would have got rid of him if I was able to throw a left hook. But I was hitting him to the body with left hooks. Okay, it's hurting me, but I was getting through it. But any time I touched him in the head, it was excruciating pain.
Of course, if you catch like the elbow or something when you're trying to hit him to the body, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, it's going to hurt.
What was he like as a fighter? Because he was giving you a bit of verbal, like in the middle rounds. I couldn't hear what he was saying though.
He was okay. He wasn't bad.
A bit green, maybe?
Yeah. Look, I know that my next fight, if it gets done with Herring, is going to be a much tougher fight. But he wasn't a bad fighter. I just think that the old cliche of levels, I was a level above, but not a bad fighter. Mm-hmm. And I think he could probably come a game. Tough kid. To be able to get up from body shots and see out the end of the fight shows a lot of resilience and toughness. And he's still young, so he might have learned a lot from that fight.
He seemed quite grateful afterwards when you went and spoke to him.
Yeah, he's a nice kid. He was a nice kid, and his team were nice people too. But it's really just business, isn't it? You just do whatever you take. I remember thinking, because I seen him in the hotel. Normally, depending on the opponent, like Jamel Herring, for example, if I see him about a hotel, I'll shake his hand, say hello. Oscar Valdez, I would shake his hand, say hello. Because he was like a green kid, as you say, I remember I didn't say hello to him, seen him, stirred him out, just trying to put the fear up on a wee bit.
Nice guy.
No,
I'm messing around.
It's just different, a different approach with different fighters.
Yeah, like,
not that I'm a bad guy,
but
you don't need to do it. Mm. You know, I was thinking this like consciously, like Valdez and stuff. If I seen him around, I would shake his hand, say hello, in the same lift as him and say hello. But I seen the kid about the lobby, I was just staring at them, like just trying to put the frighteners onto them a bit. He seemed a bit nervous, so I think it might have worked a bit.
That's good. Yeah, you spent a lot of time with Valdez, didn't you?
Did. We had a press day in LA, first time I met him, and then we done a thing at a place called Opportunity Village, where there's
it looks amazing.
It was an amazing place. So they take in these people for daycare, adults with learning disabilities, and they look after them and let the parents obviously go and work or do whatever they need to do. Wow. But an amazing facility. So I spent a day there with Oscar.
Very different to the normal sort of fight week stuff, isn't it?
It was different because it was Thanksgiving week, so there wasn't a lot to do.
Of course.
So I enjoyed it, to be honest. You're not having to be dictated to by being at meetings and weigh-ins and public workouts. Done nothing fight week apart from going to Opportunity Village, which was actually pretty nice and pretty humbling, and just brought a great deal of perspective into anyone that was there. I think it was a nice day.
Nice. It's not in the plan, but actually, I do want to talk to you because Nonito Donaire come to watch you.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen each other since that fight with Inoue. What a fight, by the way.
What a fight. And I spoke to Nonito about it. Great fight. I knew it was going to be a good fight, and I predicted Nonito would win the fight before it.
And I thought he wasn't far off.
He wasn't far off, and I was kind of. People just had Inoue blowing him away, and I didn't see it like that.
Well, never in his entire career has he been blown away against
big men, and that's why I think people were looking at Donaire unfairly going into the fight.
Yeah,
I knew it was going to be a difficult fight for both guys. I fancied Donaire, thought he could win it. He got close, but Inoue won the fight. But what a fight! Like the talk about everything on show, the resilience from both men, the toughness, the skill level was through the roof.
It was
an unreal fight. And not a bad commentating performance from yourself,
Thanks
son.
Very much. Mentioned
a
that.
Lot of people have talked about that, you know.
Yeah.
Chris Lloyd's not bad at commentating.
We were saying, sorry. We found out. No, thanks very much. Don't sound surprised. Well, it could have been you, you know, but you were doing whatever you got to do.
I'm a pundit.
Yeah,
a commentator.
Sure. No, we were just hoping that there wouldn't be any. You know what it's like if you do a gig and then you log on to social media?
People giving you grief.
Yeah. You see it all the time. So in my head, all I thought was, I just hope there's no talk about the commentary and all of it's about the fight. So to have so many nice comments was wicked. But it did help that it was fight of the year.
Yeah.
But Donaire, he was in control for four or five of those rounds.
Yeah, he was. But it was a quality fight. Is that your debut in commentating?
Debut for Sky.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've done loads over the years, but not at that level.
Yeah.
So
unreal.
Yeah, it was
good.
What a fight. And you talk about a learning fight for Tyler McCreary, but for Inoue, that actually was probably better than just blowing somebody away.
Absolutely.
For his long-term progression.
Absolutely. He answered a lot of questions that he may have had going into the fight just about himself. And I think did he have a broken orbital bone
and a broken nose. Broke his nose, yeah.
To be able to deal with that against a puncher as well, like Donaire, and to come through and win the fight, it shows a lot of mental toughness and resilience. And I think that fight's going to do him the world of good. I really do. Like, we talked about big Stevie Ward, who's been on the show, his fight with Liam Conroy and how he came through that adversity. They're the fights that I'm telling you now, you go through the roof after it. Your career skyrockets after that. Like, once you know you can do that in a fight, the world's your oyster.
Can we please talk about this 8 weeks of the bet that you won with him?
Yeah. The bet was who was going to win...
Fight of the Year.
Fight of the Year.
Fight of the Year.
His fight with Conroy or my fight with Warrington.
Yeah.
Stevie really fancied himself to win it. And in fairness, I thought he was going to win it too. So we had this bet. So the loser has to make tea for the other guy, all camp. Wash the other guy's clothes, all camp. Treat the other person to a nice meal. And on one day of your choosing, wear a t-shirt.
An offensive t-shirt. Yeah.
So Stevie done all them things and... He'd done them all well. Never really complained, so credit to him.
Yeah? Nothing else you want to talk about? Good stuff. All right. Sure?
Well, are we telling now?
Yes.
I don't know if he watches the podcast.
I've still got guilt from it.
Okay, so...
I don't want to be...
Right, this is what happens. Now, Stevie doesn't know this, but he will know now.
I'm really sorry, by the way, Steve.
he wanted to bet because he was really confident that he was going to win the... fighter or the fight of the year, and I thought he was going to win it, so I'd kind of went, nah, I think you're going to win anyway, blah, blah, blah. So I was meant to go to the awards, and then I had to pull out, and Robert Smith phoned me and said, Carl, can you reconsider, because you've won an award. We don't normally like to tell people, but you've won fight.
So sorry, Steve.
You've won fight of the year. Can you reconsider?
8 fucking weeks.
So I couldn't do it. Literally, I hung up the phone and said, sorry, I can't do it. 30 seconds later, Stevie phoned me. Carl, we're doing this bet or what? I went, all right, well, let's do it. So I just had the end from Robert Smith had won. And then we'd done the bet. And Stevie, like a trooper, done everything that was asked of him. So.
Tell you what, you got your phone on you?
Yes.
FaceTiming.
I don't. I do. It's out there somewhere.
Can we get Carl's phone in it? Okay, but then there's something else to the story. 3 weeks in. So we're voice noting on WhatsApp, and
that's right.
You've gone to me. You said something to me.
You
right?
Nearly dropped me on it. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know he was there, did I? And you said something to me, and I said, I don't know whether to trust you anymore, given what you've done to Stevie.
Yeah.
And
turned it off.
My phone then went, and it was Stephen Ward, and he went, "Hey, Chris, what's going on here?" And I'm thinking, shit. I'm thinking, shit. And I waited.
Is that the one accent you do for all people from Northern Ireland?
It's sort of similar. Yours is a bit more like that. Stevie's a bit lower. So I've got Stevie's number.
There's a lot of chaos.
That's fine. It's nice.
You tell him.
Fuck off, am I telling him?
I don't want to tell him. You won't answer.
So just so you know, we're ringing Stevie Ward. Carl's got to tell Stevie what's happened. What do you mean he won't answer?
He may be true on him. No, he'll answer.
Good stuff. Cheers, Steve. Ruin the show. Yeah, tell you what we'll do. I'll leave the phone there in case he rings, all right? So essentially, right?
We shouldn't tell him.
You then... No, we should tell him. You then said to me, please, please don't tell him because I need my washing done and... I really want him to wear this T-shirt.
Yeah.
So I then lied to Steve because you made me lie.
A white lie?
It was a lie.
Well, it was a good... It was like
a white lie that made someone do your laundry for 8 weeks.
It was funny.
It was funny. But so, I do feel a bit bad.
Don't. It's all right.
Cheers.
Listen, he owes me a lot and he knows it. So.
Yes, so Stevie's in action 14th December.
Yeah. I'll be over in London. Supporting him. Obviously, he doesn't know who he fights yet because the draw is made on Fight Week, which probably isn't brilliant for the fighters, but in terms of boxing fans and people wanting to see the show, it leaves a bit more excitement. So I'm looking forward to whoever he has to fight on the 14th, it is?
14th, yeah. In Brentwood, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, MTK Golden Contract. It's good fight, isn't that? Jose Burton, Bob Adjasaf, who's a bit of a... He's like 34, but he's a bit of a bogeyman for a few people.
Puncher.
Yeah. Yeah, he's decent. Conroy, of course, as well.
Yeah,
it's going to be a good tournament. Really looking forward to that.
I think Burton's probably the favourite.
I would say so.
In terms of the boogies, but yeah. And he really rates himself. He sees himself as the favourite. Stevie and guys like Conroy and other guys in the tournament aren't really saying too much. There was a guy who just fought Bivol.
Lenin Castillo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, decent.
Yeah, he looked good, to be fair. Like, decent shape. Okay. Didn't do a lot, but...
Yeah, but decent. Going to be hard for anyone to win.
Mm, for sure. So, let's talk about you. So, obviously, in the ring, you were there with Bob. Genuinely, I say that I'd had a few beers, but I thought there was a security guard next to him because he had a black waistcoat on, tie, and he looked like about 6 foot. Was Jamal Herring?
Yeah,
big lad.
Yeah, big lad.
How does he?
I think he's about 5'9", 5'10", so similar height to McCreary, but he's obviously out of shape at the minute. Mm. He fought a month ago or 3 weeks ago. He's put on a lot of weight. People are saying, "Oh, he's way too big. He's too big for Frampton." But I'm looking at that going, he is going to absolutely kill himself to get down to the weight. And obviously, he's a big guy. He's a southpaw. He's going to cause me problems in the fight. But I'm looking at that and thinking, I can use this to my advantage. Like, the struggles he's going to have to make the weight, I've got to be able to use it to my advantage and apply a fast pace from the start. This is before I've even spoke to Jamie about tactics, but I think that I'll be fine in that fight. Like, I fought big men my whole career. And I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Because what was Saturday? Was it 128 you fought at?
128, which wasn't easy to make.
No, I was going
to
say, because you looked a little bit like tight.
Yeah, I was tighter than I expected.
That is genuinely probably just a bit of age, isn't it? 32, I just think things get a little bit difficult.
Yeah, it gets a bit harder to make a weight. The weight comes off slower. Yeah, I was water loading that week, and the weight was just dropping nicely. And then the day before the weigh-in, I hadn't been losing as much as I had been the previous day. So I had a little bit more to take off than I expected the last day, but... I got there and made the weight.
Good man. Andres Gutierrez, who famously slipped in the shower. How many days before your fight?
It was after the weigh-in, the day before.
Brilliant. Came in for his fight with Oscar Valdez, 141 pounds. So apparently they did check weights all the way up. Yeah. But you said to me the other day, you're not convinced about those.
The check weights, I've done these before. All you have to do is send a photograph of your weight. So there's no one for
the
British Border Control check weigh-in, you have to see a Border Control official. They have to see you on the scales and make sure you're making the weights.
Yeah.
WBC check weigh-in is literally a photograph. So what I've seen done before is someone get on the scales, show their feet in the picture, someone else behind them
just lifting at the waist,
lifting their hand or holding their hand, making them a little bit lighter. And that's all you do.
Mad.
So I'm pretty sure that's what Gutierrez has probably done.
Yeah, because it was like a 3-week one. It was like 1, 3,
Yeah, it was just inside it every time.
Yeah, just inside like 133.8 on like whatever it was, 7 days. Yeah. It's like, that's fine.
Yeah.
And then he comes in at 141. Yeah. It's like, well, that's not
I've possible. Seen people trying to like figure out how he's done it. Like, you know, how he's made these check weigh-ins and then missed it by so much. But I would guess that he didn't make the check weigh-ins.
But what's mad about it is you said his demeanour and everything was just of a fighter. Strange. He was on weight and everything.
I seen him. He was in my hotel. I seen his team walking about it. I didn't see him the whole week, even though he was in the same hotel as me. But I seen him on the weigh-in there and he came over, gave me a little fist pump, a hug, because we knew each other. We were meant to fight.
Yeah.
Good luck, Andres, blah, blah, blah. And he just seemed just normal. As if he's about to get on the scales, and he gets on and he's 11 pounds. Why did he get on the scales in the first place?
Like, how, why did he do it? No, because it's miscalibrating, think, like, and getting a couple of pounds out.
Yeah, I don't know why he's done it. I really don't. Like, if I was his team, what I would have said was, right, you're not getting on the scales, you're faking an injury, of course. How can a promoter trust him ever again? Like, he could just ruin a show completely. I think Bob Arum says he'll never use Gutierrez again or any of his team ever again to make fights. So, and rightly so. Rightly so. Nice. Arum was furious. He threw him out of the hotel. And rightly so.
Yeah, yeah.
But luckily we got Adam Lopez come in and stepped in for Oscar Valdez, and we had a fight still.
And flipping nearly did the job.
Nearly did the job. Made it a bit more exciting. Credit to Valdez for taking the fight. He went in. He could have just said, I'm not fighting, new opponent, and got paid. But credit to him for taking the fight.
What would you have done?
I think I'd have probably fought as well.
Yeah, because you're itching at that point.
And people are travelling to see you and support you. If he wanted, he could have not fought. So you have to give him a lot of praise for that.
So the plans, obviously, for as far as Bob was concerned, was to get Oscar through that fight, get you through this fight, I guess line Oscar up for Miguel Bichel, it's the WBC,
is
it? And then Herring, he's got the WBO.
Yeah.
So that's the plan for you, I guess.
Looks like it.
Herring seems to be up for it.
Herring seems to be up for it, and in Belfast as well, which was a surprise to me up until probably a week before the fight. So I was just assuming that it would have to be New York because Herring is from New York. He's the champion. I thought it would still do pretty well in New York. Obviously, the Irish-American community on the East Coast, somewhere anyway, will come out and support me. A lot of people would travel as well. But Arm says it makes more sense doing it in Belfast. And it does. Herring gets paid more than he's ever got paid in his life. In his lifetime, he thinks that as a champion, and he's openly stated this, he wants to travel. He wants to tour the world.
I like
and
that.
See, so do I. Yeah. I absolutely like, and I respect him. I don't think there's a hidden agenda here with Herring at all. He's a family man. He wants to do what's best for his career, and he wants to get paid well as well. Mm. So that's really the bottom line here. So
he said he was a fan of yours, kind of as you.
And I'm and likewise, I'm a fan of his. Yeah. Like Boston, I like his style, big tall. So I like his backstory as well.
Yeah.
Being a, you know, serving with
in the army.
Was he Marine or the Army?
I think so, something like that. Yeah.
So Olympian and had a few defeats and a lot of things that went on in his life that haven't been great and could have broken a lot of people, but he's a world champion now, so credit to him.
And he will, having been a fan of yours, watched your fights and seen some of the Belfast fight nights, so he will also want to experience that, and he's going to know that there aren't, well, there's no one else in Ireland that he could get that reception against. So to go and have that night and experience that kind of atmosphere, I think as a champion, why would you not do that? He can fight in New York anytime he wants.
Yeah.
He can't come and fight in Belfast.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So Windsor Park then? Is that the plan?
Well,
or the Odyssey?
I think Arum is keen for the Odyssey,
yeah,
or the SSE Arena, as it's now called.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm pushing for Windsor. Top Rank are just a little bit concerned about weather conditions. If we do it in May, I have to get these hands operated on. So
there is time, yeah.
So we've plenty of time. I'll need to have a bit of time off to recover. So both hands need operations. So I think that May, the weather's normally okay.
Sweet.
If it rains, it rained the last time I fought at Windsor Park. No one really cared.
Yeah,
probably added to the atmosphere a little
it
bit.
It rained at Fools Park, didn't it? And it didn't matter at all.
So I think we'd do it at Windsor and pack it out. It would be unreal.
Oh, that's going to be great, isn't it? If you get through that and you secure a title, would you then look to fight the winner of Valdez and Bichel?
Yeah, of course.
Finish off
a unification fight. Potentially unifying my second division. That is... what a career that would be,
man.
If I get the chance to do that, yeah, then why not? But at this stage in my career, it's one fight at a time. And said that going into the McCreary fight, one fight at a time, and I'm saying exactly the same. Hopefully the Herring fight can get done, but one fight at a time.
Somebody that had a little word on where your career's going is your old mate Georgie Groves. Do you want to have a listen to this?
Why not? Yeah.
Super Feather. He's never going to have a chance, I don't believe, winning a world title. Super Feather. His natural style and ability.
He'll definitely never have a chance of winning the world title. Super Feather.
Right away. So Super Bantams, when he had all his success, he won a title up. I think a feather, but he couldn't compete with Josh Warrington, who is a good fighter. Obviously, he's proven that time and time again. But they're talking about his punch power. He hurt Frampton. Real bad in that fight, but I don't believe Warrington.
Let's not talk about chins here.
He's more about volume punching. So I'm not really sure what Frampton's plans are now. He talks about becoming a world champion again, but he's also dabbles in a few other things. He likes his podcast.
TKO on Joe. So
time to time, he's came across my path recently, so I had to have a little word with him. But
word with him, patronizing.
I think it might just be just hanging on in there. I think boxing wise, to sort of carry on the status of a pro boxer.
But fuck off! What a world title.
You right?
All right.
Right, do you want to talk to me about that then?
Yeah, it's just this bullshit, isn't it?
Right, let's actually get to the bottom of this, because the thing about this is none of this stuff is actually what this is about.
No, it's not.
That's what's so ridiculous. Yeah. So you sort of stoked the fire when Callum Smith was on a few weeks ago, because you said, oh, I think George might have quit. I remember looking at you thinking, I know you don't probably necessarily mean that. But
do you know what? I don't mean it. Would I class George Groves as a quitter? No. I was having a dig.
Because of what's happened.
Because of what's happened before. Right. And people may
happened.
Say unfairly, but I don't think it was unfair.
Right.
Main reason he tried to embarrass me. But anyway, so we'll go right to the start, right?
Because people need to know, to be fair.
Okay. That's going to sound very petty at the start.
It is quite petty.
Well, not really petty as we...
Yeah, of course. The bigger picture stuff. Yeah.
So at the start, obviously there's a dispute between Groves' former team and my former team. Mm-hmm. I'm having a dispute with the people that he was training with and Barry McGuigan and stuff like that. They were always around the gym, blah, blah, blah. So they're all friends. I'm having a dispute with them. Nothing to do with George Groves.
And you used to get on with George?
Me and George get on like a house on fire. I always felt like very intelligent bloke. You could have a sensible conversation with him, and it's not just boxers talking shit about boxing all the time. Mm-hmm. He's quite a deep character, and I liked him, and he allowed us to train in the gym when the McGuigans were without a gym for a while, which I was very appreciative of. Like, I liked George. I did like him. Anyway, so how did it start?
Well, we invited him on the show, and I said to you, why don't you DM him? Because, you know, I spoke to Duncan Ross. I hadn't heard from Duncan for a couple of days. And I said to you, why don't you DM George? And you went, oh, he's unfollowed me.
That's right. Yeah. So that's when I found out that he unfollowed me.
Yeah.
So I remember being annoyed a little bit. Because it was like, because me and George never had, like, me and him always got on well. I'm thinking, because there's been a breakdown between me and the McGuigans, is that maybe the reason why...
Has he been influenced by something they said?
Yeah, well, whatever. Is that why... And I thought he was sensible enough to not just like be his own man and have his own thoughts.
Like, you and Josh Taylor are still friends.
Me and Josh Taylor are still friends. There's other people who will not mention their names in the McGuigan camp that I keep in touch with and wish well and likewise.
Yeah.
So he unfollowed me. Sounds really petty. But I went on then and I wished him well after he retired. So I wished him well. Congratulations, great career, blah, blah, blah. And then what else happened? There was something else really petty. Oh, he said a statement and he said curveball rather than curveball. So I cracked it and said curveball. And that was me a wee dig back saying, don't unfollow me. And why'd you unfollow me? It's petty. But
didn't you bump into him at an awards evening or something like that, you said? And he didn't speak to you.
Yeah, well, he kind of blanked me at an awards night as well, which was like, all right, like, what's going on here?
Just suddenly a bit unnecessarily awkward.
Yeah, it was, considering we always get on pretty well with each other. So anyway, when I corrected the curveball, he blocked me.
Got a lot of likes, that was good.
Yeah, so he blocked me. And then Tommy Coyle was fighting on the AJ undercard. I'm getting really animated here, I can feel myself. Tommy Coyle was fighting on the AJ undercard in New York, AJ Ruiz.
Yeah.
I had to walk through a room to get into Tommy Coyle's change room, and I walked through this room, and George was there with...
Josh Denzel?
Him. He was a Love Island guy.
Yeah.
Nice guy.
Yeah, he's
nice. And there was a few people in the room. So George and like that Josh fella and a few other people. And I walked over and says, "How you doing, George?" Trying to say hello. And he just went, blanked me, complete me, like, and embarrassed me in front of these people. I remember walking out of the room thinking, what a fucking prick.
Oh, so that's when it was in New York. It wasn't, when I said to you, oh, there's an award ceremony,
It was in New York. Gotcha. So it really annoyed me. So when we had Calum Smith on the show, that was my way of kind of digging him out a wee bit.
That's the thing, because I knew when you said that, I thought, well, I know all of the backstory. Mm. So I know you don't mean this. But if I was just looking as an uneducated observer,
looks like I'm an asshole.
It's a bit of an ass comment. Yeah,
of course. But there was reasons for, and it was kind of like, I had to say something. I wanted to like get him back. And the worst bit was when he embarrassed me in front of people. And I remember just thinking, what a fucking prick.
And also because you'd never do anything like that, because you talk to everybody and you would never, I know someone come up to you, whatever had happened, you'd always shake their hand. Even if you didn't like somebody, if someone extended their hand, you'd give them the respect of.
None of them like them.
Okay.
Not a soft lad. You know what I mean? If something like someone, like someone come up to me and tried to shake my hand.
So did that. It's fine.
Well, it depends who they are. But it depends who you are. It annoyed me because I got on so well with George. I just feel like it's a bit of a shame.
But he really overreacted to that comment. Like, he really overreacted to your comment on the Smith
Absolutely,
thing.
Yeah. He went nuts. Really lost nuts. People are saying, and people are still calling me half pint from that, as if George Groves made up the half pint. I've been called half pint for fucking the last 30 years of my life. So George Groves didn't invent half pint. Everyone's called me out. So, he spat the dummy out. But anyway, it's been said and done. I've had my go, he's had his go, and I hope that we can maybe say hello to each other from now on.
Bloody hell. I hope so.
So do I genuinely do.
If Carl Foch and George Groves can now be friends, you and George Groves can at some point be friends again.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. All right, mate. Joshua Ruiz tomorrow. Speaking of New York, last time we were there, what a shock that was.
Yeah.
That was one of the maddest nights I can ever remember in boxing.
Absolutely. The maddest night I've ever been involved in. I was lucky enough to be there. I was there, obviously, with Tommy Coyle and supporting him, but I was working with Five Live as well. Just listening to Mike Costello describe it.
Oh, how good is he?
He's unreal. I remember just thinking, what is happening here? This is like a huge night. This is like a real moment in boxing history that's going to be spoken about for decades. Mm. And I was lucky enough to be a part of it. What an amazing night.
Quite sad watching Joshua sort of fold over a long period of time.
Very sad.
I think he fought most of that fight concussed.
Yeah.
And ultimately didn't really know much about where he was and still negotiated through another three or four rounds when actually there was a point in that, it was the third round he got knocked down twice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we were sat right next to that corner post and there were these little fold-out seats in the barriers. We weren't even supposed to be there, but nobody moved us. So we were like, well, let's sod it, let's sit. So we're literally 8 feet from him when he's in the corner the second time, taking the standing eight count. And the referee said, step forwards. And he actually couldn't step forwards.
Yeah.
And you could see the moment in the referee's eyes where he thought, I'm about to lose a lot of people, a lot of money here.
Yeah.
And you could see that split second where, had that been Andy Ruiz, he'd have waved it off.
Because
it was Joshua, I think he almost pretended that he thought Joshua hadn't heard him.
Yeah.
And so he went, Anthony, I said to step forwards. He clearly just didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
The ref then steps towards Josh, grabs his gloves, and I'm thinking, there's no way he should be carrying on it. So the fact that he got through another four rounds after that was genuinely impressive.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's taken a lot of stick, Joshua, but in my opinion, he wasn't right going into the fight. I think another thing you have to give Joshua a lot of credit for is he never really made any excuses.
Mm.
But I feel, and I think a lot of people close to him, you just see him, his demeanour in the ring before the fight started. It was all just a bit too chilled and relaxed. I don't think he was right. But he stayed in there for as long as possible. And he finally got stopped but I think you have to give him credit for that, for staying in there for as long as he did. Mm. I really do.
So they weighed in 2 hours ago. Joshua was 237 pounds, 10 pounds lighter than he was for the first fight. Ruiz, 283 pounds, over a stone heavier. How is he coming a stone heavier?
I don't know. I really don't know. How has he come on a stone heavier? Like, the sage you are...
I think he's Andres Gutierrez.
Yeah. Like, how has he done that? It really baffles me. And I don't think it's right for him to do that. I think that since hearing that, already an out-of-shape Ruiz, who had a short notice for that fight, for the first fight, to come in a stone heavier does not make sense to me. I don't know why he's doing it. There was rumours that he was losing a lot of weight and he was looking slimmer at the start.
There was a couple of pictures, wasn't there, surfaced of him looking
lean.
So
has he put a lot of fat back on? I don't know what's happened.
Very odd.
Hearing Joshua coming in lighter and Ruiz coming in heavier, if you'd have put a gun to my head, I would have said Joshua's going to win the fight before the weigh-in, but I'm now a little bit more... I'm not certain anyone's going to win the fight. I think Joshua, probably. I'm more certain now that he will win the fight than I was 2 hours ago.
Because he said he's ultimately been a full-time boxer in this camp, and I know that's a bit of a misnomer, but he was before essentially splitting his time 50-50 between sparring, skill acquisition, and then he was doing 50% strength and conditioning, all this sort of coordination stuff in the sand pits, and which ultimately is fine for your general balance and your joint health and everything else, but actually it's not boxing specific. He said he's been 100% boxing, and clearly from his physique, he's laid right off the strength and conditioning. He's lost a lot of that muscle. You would imagine that will help, his engine and also his fluidity of his movement.
And I think so. I think the engine is the big thing, though. Yeah. Being so muscle-bound and so full of muscle, it's got to factor in. You've seen it with fighters over the years, like Frank Bruno, prime example, before Joshua. But you always talk about these kind of muscle-bound heavyweights and not being able to transport the red blood cells throughout their body and the oxygen throughout their body as someone... maybe less sort of muscle bound than him, but I think that Joshua,
Stephen Ward.
Oh, do we answer this?
Yeah, Stephen Ward's ringing. Stevie, can you hear me?
Yes, me.
We're currently on TKO at the moment.
Oh,
yeah, he's actually next to me. We're actually recording the show as we speak, so you're sort of technically on air.
Why we're phoning you is I have something to tell you.
Oh, what is it?
This is the thing a couple of weeks back, yes, and we wouldn't say. And Chris Lloyd has been lying the whole time.
Right.
He's an absolute liar.
Steve.
A birthed liar.
Steve. So I was coerced into this. I was an unwilling accessory to this lie. So Carl's going to apologise.
I'm not going to apologise.
Well, tell him what it is.
No. The bat, I knew.
Dirty, I knew it.
Why are you so annoyed?
Because you purposely held on so I could walk about in that stupid vest. And I just felt like
that was the best bit.
That was why he made me lie, Steve. I'm really sorry, mate. Because I wanted to tell you, but...
Do you know how many puckered lip smiles I got in Vegas? So elaborate on this.
What happened was... See, when you phoned me and said, do you want to do this bet?
Yeah.
Robert Smith had just got off the phone to me about a minute before saying for me to please reconsider not going because I've won Fight of the Year.
Do you know what, mate? I feel like this conversation doesn't need to continue. All the best of the podcast and definitely not tune in for this one.
All right. Thanks. See you later, son. Bye. Oh, I hung up.
Is he actually annoyed?
Oh, he's furious.
Oh.
That's what karma, that is.
Oh, I feel bad now. I thought you might have a laugh about it.
Well, he will later on.
You need to make it up to him.
Don't you worry. I look after Stevie.
Maybe do his washing for the next 8 weeks.
Do you know what? So... technically, the bet was still running when he got out to Vegas because he trained in Vegas for a few weeks. And I done all my own washing. I didn't want to take a piss.
Oh, that's good of you. Yeah. Oh, you really are. Your moral compass really does point north. Forgive me. There was me thinking you're a conniving little shit.
how wrong I was. Right, let's go back to Ruiz and Joshua. So I told you about 3 months ago, I think, about Angel Fernandez, yeah. Because we actually saw him when we went up to do Fraser Clark's yeah. podcast in Sheffield. I've known Angel for like a year,
yeah.
And he's a great guy, very good trainer, Isaac Chamberlain, Sandy Ryan, Jordan Reynolds, Sultan Zalbeck. So a mixture of amateurs and pros. And I saw him there doing Joshua's gloves up, and he looked at me and sort of winked and did the sort of keep your mouth zipped. And essentially he was the addition. So he's been trained under sort of Jorge Rubio. So he's got like Cuban background, all about creating angles, about, it's a different philosophy to what Rob McCracken employs.
Yeah.
But from what we've seen, some of the clips, there's going to be a lot more movement, a lot more angles.
I think he needs that. And I think losing the weight is obviously going to help him.
Yeah.
I don't think you can completely change your style overnight.
No.
And that may be an issue. You can obviously try and drill different tactics and try and change certain things. But for Joshua to all of a sudden go from in a bit of a Klitschko style, nice hands up and nice and high, 1-2s, nice big long jabs, boxing really tall, and I see him a bit more loose and fluid.
Isn't it?
It is tough to change so quickly. Is he going to get caught in the middle of two styles?
That's the big concern, isn't it?
It is. But I think that coming in later with a little less muscle mass is a good thing for Joshua.
If someone's a lot taller than you, so he's obviously, 5-6 inches taller than Ruiz, he's obviously boxing very tall. Ruiz dips and comes in off the feint. Mm. Is it better if Joshua does crouch a little bit and extend the jab from a more horizontal
I think
plane?
So. And I think that what Anthony Joshua doesn't need to do ever is think about punching hard.
Just relax and let him go.
Because he's such a big unit of a man. Like, if he hits you, just if he thinks about punching fast and Ruiz with his momentum coming on the shots, I think that Joshua could take him out first round, last round, whenever. He's got that much power. But I think that he just... One criticism I would have had of him before is a bit stiff.
Yeah.
And hopefully, looks like they're trying to change this, but has there been enough time? That's the big question.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he had everyone says, fair play to him for taking the rematch. But ultimately, from a promotional standpoint, I don't think Eddie had any choice, because if they don't take that, Andy Ruiz walks back to Al Haymon and PBC with the other three heavyweight belts.
Yeah.
And they're talking about creating these PBC belts. And the only way you can do that is if all of your fighters have all four. So that gives an enormous amount of the market share of the heavyweight division, well, in fact, pretty much all of it, to one promoter who's then going to close the door.
Well, I think you still have to give him credit, though, for going straight into the fight. Mm. I think that, ideally, what if you were his team and you don't have the situation with Haymon and these new PBC belts and they've got another champion in Wilder, ideally what you do if you're Hearn and AJ is get someone like Fury's last two opponents, that sort of level, blow them away, get the confidence back, and then go into a fight with Ruiz. But going straight into it after such a devastating loss, mentally, AJ will have to be very, very strong. But I'm backing him.
Very, very interesting. Good man. Well, it's been good to catch up with you, mate.
You too, boss.
Been a long time. We'll be back in the new year, I guess, won't we?
Yep.
Have a little bit of break. You're going to Lapland with the kids.
Eat some mince pies that aren't mince meat.
There you go.
Well, they are mince meat, not beef.
No, they're not beef. It's mincemeat.
I feel like it's my new thing. I think my whole family probably thought they were... No one in my family eats mince pies. Maybe they all
this
thought they were mince.
This is insane. I don't...
My dad's a clever man. Did he...
Is he, though?
Well... Maybe he doesn't know. Maybe he knows that they're not mincemeat.
No one thinks that, apart from you and apparently your parents.
The Framptons.
It's insane. But yeah, basically.
Apple in that too.
Yeah, they're probably a little bit of apple. Mincemeat is like, I feel like it's sultanas.
Mincemeat.
Apple.
You said mincemeat.
There's no meat in it.
Why, you just said there is?
It's called mincemeat, but there's no meat in it.
It's not called mincemeat. It's called a mince pie because it's just minced.
Fucking hell. It's honestly like explaining something.
I call them minced meat pie.
She's
11. I call them minced meat pie.
You call them a mince pie, but it's called mincemeat. So when you buy it in the jar, mate, I've made these with my mum for years.
And you call it mincemeat, it's called mincemeat in a jar.
Yeah, and you put it in.
Well, that's obviously where the confusion's coming.
You're a fucking weird little idiot. We're going to have a mincemeat.
Minced fruit? Why don't I call that?
I don't fucking know. Why don't you give Tesco's a call? Question for you then. How many mince pies are eaten each year? Got Psy in my ear with a in the UK each year.
In the
UK, at Christmas. At Christmas, sorry.
At Christmas time?
Yeah, December.
12 million.
370 million.
Don't believe it.
370
Which
million?
You don't believe it. Why would they make it up?
Who's...
Honestly, I would get through. I've had... What's it? December the 6th. I've probably had 25.
Well, I've never had one until half an hour ago.
Well, like, what about the people that think there's minced beef in them that haven't been eating them?
I've never met anyone in 30 years that's just thought that's apart from you, mentalist. Right. Good to see you, mate. Merry Christmas.
You too.
Merry Christmas to all of you watching at home. TKO for Christmas done and dusted. What a year we've had. Thanks to everybody that's tuned in this year. We'll be back in the new year with more exclusive special guests and much, much more. Enjoy your Christmas from Carl, myself, everybody at the team at Joe. Thanks for watching. Goodbye.
You've been listening to TKO on Joe.